Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program.
Hi there, good to be with you, especially for those who are not able to join us during the Olympics. Well, tonight, an issue that's been around forever, and this week emerged in a ground-up backlash on social media. The sexualisation of childhood. In its present form, the debate goes back to Ken and Barbie. And here in Australia, a couple of years ago, if you recall, there was the arts debate surrounding Bill Henson's photography. Well, the precipitating cause this past week is the style of clothing marketed to young girls by Target department stores. Earlier this year, the Australian Medical Association called for an inquiry into the premature sexualisation of children in marketing and advertising when AMA President Dr. Steve Hambleton said that self-regulation by the advertising industry was clearly not working. He also remarked that premature sexualisation is likely to be detrimental to child health and development. Back in 2008, the Senate Standing Committee on Environment, Communication and the Arts undertook an inquiry into the sexualisation of children in the contemporary media environment. The committee recommended another inquiry 18 months later. That recommendation has not been acted upon. And this week, Target became the target. When it was ambushed on its own Facebook site, a mother expressed concern at the range and style of clothing being marketed to children, including high-cut shorts and see-through tops for girls under 10. It appears that thousands joined the groundswell by posting messages on the Target Facebook page supporting the complaint. So tonight, real concerns or more populist venting? In a few moments, we'll be joined by a panel in which you too can have your say by giving us a call on 1300 800 222. 1300 800 222 is the talkback number for us here on Sunday nights on ABC Radio. If you're in South Australia or the Northern Territory, you may wish to give us a call now, but for the rest of you, just hang on for a little while and there'll be a chance to get in on the act. In our second hour, we'll be taking a look at one or two current offerings on the screen with Jesuit priest and film critic Richard Leonard, who'll be joining us. Then on this, the 100th anniversary of the death of William Booth, founder of the Salvation Army, we're joined by Dr. Don Burke of Booth College in Canada, soon to be the world's first accredited Salvation Army university. Of course, our regular features include The Inquisition, The Good Life with Noel Debien, and The Chat Room, where tonight Bill Ledbetter will be along to take your calls on the issues of the week. So let us begin with a song, and from the many and varied songs on our theme, we've selected Ringo Starr. Ringo Starr, you're 16, you're beautiful, and you're mine. Sugar and spice, yes, but when does sugar and spice become something wholly darker? What's the matter with kids today, or rather, what are we doing to kids today? And is that what matters? The sexualisation of children is the issue following this week's surprise Facebook fallout for Target stores accused of marketing sexually inappropriate clothing to kids. And it's a pleasure to welcome our panel of guests, Dr. Joe Tucci of the Australian Childhood Foundation, Melinda Tankard-Reist of Collective Shout, and Professor Elizabeth Handley of the Australian Council on Children and the Media. And in a few minutes' time, we'll also say hi to Maggie Hamilton, author of What's Happening to Our Girls. Welcome to you all. Thanks for joining us.
A pleasure, John.
Thanks, John.
Elizabeth Handley, the Australian Council of the Children and the Media has been around for some time and concerned for these issues. Is there any particular concern you have that causes the issue to be one that we should take seriously at the moment?
Yes, absolutely, John. I would go back to your statement at the beginning of this segment saying that this is an issue that's been around forever. Actually, it hasn't been around forever. It's only been around for about 10, 15 years tops. What we're seeing here is the industry's seeing children more and more as fair game for marketing. which is a relatively new thing that's just been happening possibly in the last generation or so. And then one part of the marketing that is now being seen as appropriate to use on children is what's known as sex sells. So it uses the trappings of adult sexuality to market to children. It's actually nothing to do with sex itself. It's to do with the cultural trappings of sexuality. So it's to do with, say, a Playboy bunny or a particular kind of clothing that would normally be used by an adult woman to make herself sexually attractive, that's now being superimposed onto childhood.
Melinda Tankard-Reist, Collective Shout has been concerned with this for some time. In fact, Collective Shout exists to raise awareness of this and similar issues. What are your principal concerns about what's happening at present?
We're concerned with the objectification of women, sexualisation of girls in media and popular culture, and the broader pornification of culture. Many of us are struggling to raise happy, healthy and resilient children in a culture that is wallpapered with hypersexualized representations of women and girls. And so our children are getting distorted beliefs, they're imbibing certain cultural views about their bodies, about relationships, about sexuality, which all the global research tells us is harmful to them. So that's why we started up 2.5 years ago, was to equip and empower people to take grassroots action and bring corporates to account for engaging in what we call sexploitive behaviours.
Joe Tucci, what Elizabeth is saying is linked to what Melinda is saying, in that the sexualisation of kids is a result of something new, that is the commodification of sex. It's almost as though it's an incidental byproduct that there will be damage and fallout. Is there evidence of damage and fallout?
Oh, I think it is. I think that in our research what we've found is that there's an increase in confusion amongst children around identity. There's an increased sense of anxiety for children in relation to whether they fit in, and specifically whether what they have to do to fit in. And what we've seen is an increase in the number of children who are engaging in problem sexual behaviour. So kids who are engaging, who are acting out in a sexually reactive way, sometimes in an abusive way towards other children, because what they're trying to do is make sense of a community that is sending them messages that tell them that sexuality needs to be part of behaviour, and especially behaviour that's cool or trendy or you know, positive in order to fit in with a particular group. So there are very real and tangible impacts and consequences of this kind of thing out there in the community for kids.
I mentioned in my introduction that a couple of years ago, well, 4 years ago now, in 2008, the Senate Standing Committee on Environment, Communication and the Arts undertook an inquiry into the sexualisation of children in contemporary media, and the committee recommended another report 18 months later. This does not seem to have gone anywhere, Elizabeth Hansley. Why not, do you think?
Well, look, the most obvious reason is because the senator who took the lead on that inquiry, Senator Lynn Allison, is no longer in the Senate, so there's nobody there to push it along. But we can also look back to the actual recommendations that were made, which were almost entirely to leave it in the lap of industry itself to do something. And there has been no actual monitoring or official monitoring of just how much industry has done. I think we can all observe there have been some slight improvements in some of the things that were identified in the Senate committee report itself. But then there have also been completely new things that have come on board since then. And overall, things seem to have gotten worse, if anything, but there's just nobody being a champion of this issue at the federal level.
Well, let's take some examples to start with. We've mentioned that a few years ago, and most Australians would remember the Bill Henson issue over his photography and whether or not that was boundary boundary issues engaged there. Across what range of arts, industry, literature, whatever, Melinda Tankard-Reese, are we seeing this issue being a lively one and one that is deserving of some concern?
Very happy to address that. I'd just like to make one point following on from what Elizabeth has just said. I think we also have to look at vested interests of big business, and government is often beholden to those vested interests, to the power of the advertising and marketing industries, which is why the failed self-regulatory approach continues, because governments have preferred to offload their ethical duties to citizens. And then it becomes up to myself, my colleagues, groups like Kids Free to Be Kids, and colleagues that are on air tonight, to do what government and regulatory bodies have failed to do.
But I'm happy to talk about that. I'd like to get to that later, in fact, because I do think there is a quite serious issue that we should talk about. But just let's get some extent, some sense of the range or extent of the issue we're dealing with.
Well, look, it's at every level: toys, games, clothes, music video clips, advertising, billboards of hypersexualized images of women, often presented as decorative objects, presented as sexually available, and girls are increasingly being posed and styled as adult women, and the viewer is invited to look at them as adult women. And we are breaking down the social taboos that once said children are off limits, and you know, they're now up for grabs because we've exhausted everything else. So let's start using children and treating them as mini adults. So it's at every level, you name it, and we see this sexualized, objectified treatment, and that's what we're concerned about. That's what we're trying to do, is to bring corporations to account for doing this, and that's why Collective Shout has launched something called the Corporate Social Responsibility Pledge, inviting corporates to sign up to a pledge not to objectify women and sexualize girls. And we're currently in discussions with Kmart, very positive discussions, and we're hoping to make an announcement on that very soon.
The arts is a difficult area. I mentioned the photography issue and of Bill Henson a couple of years ago, but if you go back further on this one, well, one only has to go back to, say, Nabokov's Lolita, movies like The Age of Consent, Taxi Driver, Carnal Knowledge. This issue has been the subject of legitimate or misplaced concern of artists and the arts community for a number of decades. And certainly one could go back into pornography and see it always there, but I'm not talking about that. I'm thinking about the emergence onto the sort of genuine literature stage, the genuine arts credibility stage of this sort of material that is beginning to give concern. You seem to be saying, look, it's moved out of those corners and then spreads and gradually gains acceptance. Perhaps it's Elizabeth Hensley, your concern that this area is where this lays, that things emerge out of a corner that is probably legitimate and then becomes generally accepted, and cultural mores change.
Actually, no, John, I wouldn't see it that way. All of those examples that you list, and probably even the Henson photographs, are different from the sort of things that we're concerned about, because they're not about how we represent children to themselves. And that's the thing that I think was the concern of Anna Armini, the woman who wrote the post on Facebook to Target and started all of this furor of the last few days. She is concerned about how children are represented to themselves, and that includes the kinds of clothing that we make available to them. But it includes all sorts of other things, like Melinda said, sometimes the way that girls are posed in advertising for children's products and so on, the kinds of products that are marketed to children, that sends the message, yes, this is an appropriate product for you to use, otherwise we wouldn't be selling it to you, all that kind of stuff. And I don't think the things that we're talking about at the moment come from that dark corner of the Nabokov novel and Taxi Driver and things like that. I think it actually comes from the dark corner of deciding that children are fair game for marketing, that for corporates to be grooming the consumers of the future from the earliest possible age. That's the dark corner that this is coming from.
Yes, but corporates have to feel that they can move safely into those areas. And so there has been a change in sensibility, if you like, in our own culture.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really chicken and the egg when it comes to that kind of thing. I have definitely spoken to a lot of parents who've seen the kinds of clothing and products that are available for children in the last 10 years or so, and they're really not comfortable about it, but they will look at it and they will say, well, you know, maybe I'm just an old fuddy-duddy. Maybe that's what they're all wearing these days. Or maybe I'm just behind the times. So, you know, sometimes we have to accept that what is going on in the broader society, and particularly in the corporate world, can actually lead public opinion, or should we say, you know, push public opinion along to be more accepting of this kind of thing when it's not coming from the community at all.
Joe Tucci, let's talk for a moment about the psychology of childhood, particularly emergent sexual awareness and perhaps the differences between boys and girls. What's the general accepted standard in the literature about these things and about how they should be handled?
Well, that's a big question, John. Look, I think that we're exposing children to a range of ideas, both boys and girls, that at an age where they're far too young to understand it. Not just exposing them to material in a passive way, but we're encouraging them to be active in it. So when a little six-year-old wears a padded bra that was sold a few years ago for no other reason other than to change her shape and to make her look more old, you know, to make her look older, what we're doing is we're giving that little girl a message that she's not right the way that she is.
Children are sexually curious, though.
Well, they're not. I'm not sure about what sexually curious means. I think that children want to understand their bodies. I think that children, as they get older, want to understand how sex works. And that's been an issue that, you know, generations of parents have had to grapple with. But what families are now having to deal with is the fact that not only are children curious, as they have been forever, around what sex is and how sex works and what bodies can do and can't do, but what they're having to answer questions about are why there's a naked woman selling a pair of jeans on a billboard, why there's a why sexuality is so rampant in the music that we get to watch. There are messages that are inherent in the material that's around children now that are beyond what they would have had to have understood 30 and 40 years ago. And that's the issue. The issue is that parents are finding it difficult and complicated to answer questions about what does it mean, Dad, when there's a billboard that says, how do you make your sex last longer?
John, can I just make a quick comment on that as well? Yeah. Look, this has never been about condemning healthy sexual development in children, though many of our opponents claim that that's the case. It's about imposing adult concepts of sexuality onto children at an age when they're not developmentally or cognitively equipped to understand those messages. That's what this is about. It's about an assault, really, on the healthy, normally developing sexuality of children, which is almost impossible in the current culture.
The difficulty that brings us to is what is normative for a culture. The reason it's become a touchstone issue, I guess, at the moment is because not only do you have changing standards about what's normative over time, but you also have the rapid changes in technology, meaning that everybody has access to almost everything. So no longer are things siloed off as they once were generationally or age boundary, if you like, you know, the adults only corner. So yes, those things compound this issue, do they not? It's not as simple as it once was to actually define these boundaries.
Well, that's correct, John, because in the past, children weren't seeing pornography at the age of 11. We know that the average age of first exposure to porn is 11. We know that 70% of boys have seen porn by the age of 12 and 100% by the age of 15. And our boys are being shaped into a very calloused and brutal version of masculinity. Our girls have been given a message that they exist primarily as sexual service stations for men and boys. Boys are getting a message that the girls and women exist to provide them with sexual services, with sexual gratification. That's what girls and women are good for. And that's what's changed now, is that easy access to hardcore, misogynistic, torture porn, sadism, rape porn, incest porn, you name it. And in the past, kids weren't seeing that, and now they are, and many of them are tragically enacting the scripts that they are learning from pornography, and they think that that's normal sexual behaviour.
Yeah, but there's somewhere along this, there isn't a line you can draw across this. What we're talking about is a continuum that's changing. Like, you know, in the 19th century, women wore dresses down to their ankles. Now they don't. Social mores change. That is compounded, surely, in a multicultural society where some people are coming from extraordinarily conservative cultures, others are coming from extraordinarily liberal cultures. So, yes, you can actually say, look, if you want to take the extremes as the normative, we'll draw a black and white line there. But it's not like that in our culture, is it?
I don't think anybody's suggesting that.
Extremes have become normative. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
I don't think that anybody is suggesting that there's a black and white line. I would rather see this as an ongoing conversation throughout the community about what's appropriate for our children. And also to recognise that although social mores change, children don't. People don't change. Children don't change. We are coming to a better understanding of how children develop than we had 100 years ago or possibly even 20 years ago. But children are still pretty much the same. They still develop pretty much the same way. They still have pretty much the same needs. Yes, they are sexually curious, but yes, they need that period of latency where they can be free from sexual pressure in order to develop the skills that they need to be successful adults. And that's what they're being robbed of by having this message put in front of them and pushed onto them, saying, you know, you should be sexually attractive, or you should be attractive in a way that, well, it just happens to be sexual, whether the child understands that or not. You know, you should aspire to be like these starlets and celebrities who go around in hypersexualized get-ups and behave in hypersexualized ways and so on. That's just, you know, there's just no way that that's good for children. There's absolutely no way it's good. So if we are living in a society where those are our mores, then I think there are always going to be people who are saying, well, no, I don't accept those mores. I want to move it back, and let's have that conversation. And I guess that's what we're having now.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. John Cleary with you. We're discussing the sexualisation of children. Where does one draw lines, if any, and how are they to be drawn? Is it an issue or merely something that is being stirred up in the interests of the very media hype that in some ways is being condemned as being the agent of such dangers, if they be such. Maggie Hamilton is the author of What's Happening to Our Girls. Maggie joins us now on the line. Maggie Hamilton, thanks so much for being there.
Great to be with you, John.
Maggie, you've written about this a number of books over the years. You've heard the discussion, general as it is. Are there specific points you wish to make?
Yeah, I think one of the first things that I'd like to say is that what concerns me around the whole sexualisation of children is that this is done to make money out of them. And I think that's one thing we have to be very clear, you know, to buy products. That sex is a great way to get kids interested. And so it's not done for any social or educational or ethical or whatever benefit. I think the second thing is that because we're now living in a society where the commercial imperative is upmost, that whenever you criticise this, it's almost like you're criticising the fabric of society. And I think we've become very distorted in the way we're seeing this, because certainly from my research, what I see is a compromising of our children's humanity. And what I mean by that, I guess, John, is that those childhood years are the years where you learn about nuance, your personal nuance, hopefully, of inner self, etc., and your ability to relate to the world in a nuanced way. And the greater the humanity that you are exposed to, the more adept you'll be as an adult human being. And I just see this total focus on sex as being the penultimate way of expressing oneself as a human being is really robbing our kids of being able to express themselves fully. Not to mention the fact that we're now seeing young girls experiencing the kind of sexual assault that only adult women experienced. I mean, and I know Melinda talks to a number of people as well frequently about this, but some of the clinical psychologists I'm in touch with who run sexual support units of major hospitals, they're now seeing young girls coming into their units, 12 to 14, who've been anally gang raped and filmed. I mean, we're seeing girls as young as 8 now involved in sexting. These same clinical psychologists say they're seeing girls coming into their units now so traumatized from sexting experiences they've got involved with it, they're suffering the same level of trauma as girls who've been raped. And I could go on and on. I mean, this is not something that is elevating our girls or our boys in any way, and is really compromising their ability to grow as human beings and to walk into adult life feeling empowered and hopeful about the future. And I think this is of grave concern.
You've painted a fairly bleak picture in some ways, all of you, because you're also dealing with a society, albeit that commodification is at the heart of it, but a society that has made a decision to make the market the heart of society, a decision that's been taken over the past 30 or 40 years. It's also been concurrent with the erosion or the discrediting or whatever of those institutions which were concerned principally with moral education, and we're now seeing an increasingly relativized culture. So there's a sense in which you're almost sort of seem to be flailing about against a culture that actually can't listen because of the imperatives that are driving it.
Yes, John, look, it is bleak. We have 1 in 100 girls with anorexia. We have 1 in 10 bulimic. We have 1 in 4 teenage girls in this country wanting to have cosmetic surgery. The global literature tells us that sexualizing girls contributes to eating disorders, self-harm, depression, anxiety, low self-esteem, and poor academic performance. There is now a mounting body of global literature on this subject, and, you know, we would be wise to take heed. The fact is this, that we have seen many people become equipped and empowered, and one of the things that keeps me going in this work is the regular correspondence that I have with girls who know this culture is making them sick and who want to resist it and who want something better, and they're the ones that are going to turn this around. So yes, there are days where it seems like it's really hard, we're up against it, governments don't care, regulatory bodies don't care, but at the coalface, at the grassroots level, those of us who are on the program tonight, and Maggie also and other colleagues, are seeing the desire for something better, the desire
Absolutely.
For change, the desire to equip and empower young people to make good decisions and to resist the toxic messages from the culture. So for me, that's where the hope lies. And we've seen Collective Shout grow in leaps and bounds in only 2 years with major victories against significant corporate labels, corporate brands, and it just continues to grow. And so I take heart with that. So
and also the parents. Yes. You know, both Melinda and I are out talking to parents across the country constantly, and, you know, hundreds thousands and thousands of parents want to see this change. Educators want to see it change. Health workers. But they tend to be people who are silently working away to try and change this. But there is, you know, what happened with Target is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of how so many people feel just totally fed up with the kind of situation that they're having to deal with their children because of a lack of wider social concern to protect them and also to nurture and enhance things that are important.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia. We're talking about the sexualisation of children. Our guests are Dr. Joe Tucci of the Australian Childhood Foundation, Melinda Tankard-Reist of Collective Shout, Professor Elizabeth Hansley of the Australian Council on Children and the Media, and Maggie Hamilton, author of What's Happening to Our Girls. Now, you're welcome to join the conversation. If you'd like to give us a call, 1300 800 222, if you've got any observations or criticisms of what's been said, 1300 800 222. Let's talk about practical ways of dealing with the issue, accepting that there is an issue, and some people would still want to argue that case, and you may wish to argue that case if you want to join us, but let's talk for a moment about the way in which the issue can be approached. Joe Tucci, what's the Australian Childhood Foundation suggesting needs to be done?
Well, there's multiple levels, really, John. I mean, you start with the kind of action that parents can take, all the way through from making complaints to those companies that sell products to kids that they don't like and that they believe fit into this category, to boycotting those sorts of products, all the way through to, for example, requiring advertising companies and corporates who decide to make ads that have a sexual theme associated with them to produce a child impact statement, to make it clear that there's been some consideration given about what the impact of that ad will be, what that marketing, the impact of the marketing campaign will be on children, and for there to have been some consideration as to how to minimise that impact. I mean, that's a really important step, I think, in making this issue become, you know, much more credible and much more aware in the community at large. There's a whole range of other strategies that I'm sure Elizabeth and Melinda can talk about, but that's just some of them.
Well, let's talk about a couple of others. Elizabeth, from your perspective, and I realise the Australian Council on Children and the Media has a much wider perspective than the initial issues we've been talking about, but let's talk generally first about in commerce. Where do you think things should go?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to address that. And I'm also a professor of law, so I look at this very much from a legal and regulatory perspective, always recognising that the law's role is to balance freedom of expression and freedom of commercial activity against the public interest. But when you said before that we have decided to build our society around the market, that's true, but nobody has ever challenged the prospect that that the law and the government and the state have a role in protecting consumers from inappropriate behaviour within the market, be it fraud, be it misleading and deceptive conduct, be it overbearing behaviour towards consumers. There's a whole list of things that I think we would all agree, yes, these things should be regulated. So let's talk about sexualisation of children in that context. We regulate the media in all sorts of ways to protect all sorts of interests, including children's interests. So let's really nail this problem down, be very clear about the nature of the problem, and build it into consumer law so that we can say children consumers are being ripped off here. They are being deprived of their childhood. They're being deprived of their ability to grow up as healthy, happy, hopeful adults. Let's look at the practices that that lead to those outcomes and take steps to regulate those and to regulate them properly, not just sort of leave it up to industry themselves to be the fox guarding the chicken coop. Let's really get the whole of society via the government behind these initiatives.
Are you talking about legislation? Well, give us a concrete example of the sort of thing that you would like to see in legislation.
Well, for example, one of the issues that we have identified tonight has been relating to the way that children are represented to themselves, that children are represented to themselves in a way that suggests that being sexually alluring will improve their happiness and improve their success in life. if we are able to identify the issues that do that, sorry, the images that do that, well, let's have a law that says you can't have those sorts of images. Just like we don't allow tobacco advertising, for example, why don't we say we're not going to have advertising or other images published in the public domain or to children that carry that sort of message with them?
Does that mean girls can't model swimsuits under the age of 14 or something
no.
like that? I mean, see, that's when
no,
it becomes an argument.
No,
I know you didn't, but you know what I mean. It rapidly degenerates into that sort of argument, doesn't it?
Well, look, it does, but law is full of, you know, law and regulation are both full of grey areas where we debate an issue and we come out with the best conclusion that we can come out with at the time. It's a process. It's not a line that you draw once and for all time. It's a process. And so, what might appear to be really damaging in one context might not be so damaging in another, and that's an ongoing conversation. But you know, the fact that you won't always come up with a clear answer that every single person's going to be happy with is not a reason not to have some kind of rule or law or regulation whereby society can say, you know, we condemn this kind of behaviour, we condemn these kinds of images, and we don't want them in the public domain.
Melinda.
Yes, Collective Shout would very much like to see the objectification of women and sexualisation of girls treated within current anti-discrimination law. We see this as an issue of equality. We see it as an issue that contributes to the second-class status of women. What Collective Shout does is encourages parents not to buy into the culture, but we also call on governments and regulatory bodies to take action. It takes a village to raise a child, and too often parents are scapegoated and parents are sort of seen to have total responsibility, even though we are not with our kids 24 hours a day. So we feel there needs to be intervention at every level. And, you know,
but
many
of
our...
What sort of regulation? What sort of intervention?
Well, we'd like to see, as I said, objectification and sexualisation treated within current anti-discrimination frameworks.
Categories.
We'd like to see...
But there's subjective categories.
We'd like to see also a pre-vetting system for advertising. We'd like to see corporate social responsibility and ethical behaviour. We think it would be so much better for corporates to choose to act ethically rather than to be forced to by citizens. If they did the right thing, then they would be able to avoid the kind of backlash that Target has currently experienced. Before I came in tonight, I checked the likes on Anna Amini's post on Target's Facebook, it was up to 79,600. That is a groundswell that corporates just cannot ignore. So it has to happen at every level. And, you know, we'd be looking to someone like Elizabeth and other colleagues to you know, work out the precise nature, but they would be some of the general parameters so that we can see these things as harmful and discriminatory, which is what the global literature tells us they are.
Maggie, from your experience, do you think it's a legislative approach that's required now?
I think it is, but I also think it's a grassroots approach as well because, the whole legislative thing takes time, and I think what we need is media education in primary schools because this is where the issues are starting to bite. I mean, we're now seeing little girls as young as 7 having to go into formal counselling for eating issues, anxiety and depression. I think also we need to up parent education because I certainly know from my own experience many, many parents you meet don't feel good about the climate, but they too have become vulnerable with the whole cool factor around marketing, and that kind of overrides often their instincts as parents to make certain calls in terms of activities girls are allowed to do, the dress codes, etc. And I think we need a wider community awareness of the fact that we can speak up about these things, because what I see in talking to many people around the country is they've started to feel as if it's too hard, the corporates are too powerful, they don't feel good about it, but they feel there's nothing they can do. And I think that's a very dangerous mindset to get into. And education at the grassroots level, I think, is such a valuable way of turning this around.
We've a board full of calls. Let's take some right now, and it'd be good to say hi to Lyndon. Lyndon, are you there? Lyndon? Let's see if we can get Lyndon online. Lyndon, are you there? No, I've got a problem with the phone here.
I must be out of range.
Lyndon, are you there?
Yeah.
Good on you.
Yes, that's all right. I thought I was out of range. I'm driving a truck at the moment.
All right.
I'm a butcher by trade. And,
keep it short, Lyndon. We can't. Yeah. We can hardly hear you.
No, I'm a butcher by trade, and I can see this happening about 12, 15 years ago. The problem starts at home. The mothers have got to realise their kids, and they've got to stay kids as long as they possibly can. And the mothers have got to be taught that keep them as kids. That's all I've actually got to say.
Okay, thanks, Lyndon.
What about the fathers?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes.
It's all on the mothers all the time, isn't it? It's all on the mothers.
Lyndon's also raised another issue, though, too, hasn't he? That is the issue that the life at home is now dominated by the television set. What comes out of the TV is so dominant in our own sort of personal and private lives now. It's not parents,
well,
it's not the
that's
churches,
absolutely
it's not
right.
School.
That's absolutely right, John. And when we talk about media literacy, we need to remember that a lot of children spend more time in front of TV and other screens than they do in their whole week or year of school. So even if you filled up every single hour of school with media education, it would still not be as much as the stuff that they're getting from the media itself.
Let's go to Shane in the Mornington Peninsula. Hello, Shane. Welcome.
Great program. Look, TV is obviously, ever since it's been introduced to our society, you can see the reflection in the behaviours now generationally. Now we've got the internet and Xboxes and the like and V-drinks and all that. You can see a structure there that's not really beneficial for good community and value and family values to actually develop. So, and, you know, these things have got to be really looked at. And I really believe now with digital TV, you'll see most of the cartoons, if you really pay attention to most of the cartoons that are very vivid, they've got not really many family values or really community values in them. They've got a theme that's sort of like, you know, okay, just have a look at it yourself a bit more in depth, and you'll see that I believe that TV has obviously got to be addressed in a lot of the problems we're going to see with generations now.
Elizabeth, this is back to you again.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, it's got to be said there is some fantastic content on TV, and that nobody is suggesting that TV has no role to play in society, but there are a lot of things on TV that are not designed for children, either in the sense of they're actually designed for adults or they're put in front of children, but they're not really designed with children's interests in mind. So obviously we need to sort of keep up our vigilance about it, actually what's on TV, as well as how many hours children spend in front of the TV. And that's something where the Australian Council on Children and the Media tries to support parents who would like to create a healthier media environment for their children, but it's a really, really tough call for a lot of people.
And we've got Dennis on the line from Wellington in New Zealand. Hello, Dennis. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, and thanks very much. Thanks, Elizabeth, and thanks to Linda. Very informative program. Certainly agree with your earlier callers. I used to live in Canberra, and about 5 years ago, we got rid of the television. And it improved the children's creativity like anything. It was a really good thing getting rid of the TV. They do a lot more reading. They're not as exposed to the culture. But certainly fully agree there should be much stronger regulation of TV. And I'm surprised that the government doesn't filter the internet a lot heavier too. Because I know with my oldest son, porn was absolutely rife among his teenage friends.
Thanks for your call and thanks for your observation, Dennis, in Wellington. Good to have you with us. To Phil in Kemp's Creek in New South Wales. Phil, what would you like to say? Phil, you there? Phil? Nah, Phil's phone's having trouble here. Let me pick up on this just while we take a couple more calls in a minute, but I'd like to pick up on some of the issues. It seems here we are talking about a genuine culture change here. People are constantly saying, or the calls we've had thus far are saying, television is at the heart of it. And this takes us back to the very issue that was raised right at the start, that is the increased commodification of society. And when you have commodification and the marketplace, the boundaries are always going to be tested. we're in a society where values are no longer coherent across the society. One could easily envisage the sorts of regulatory remedies we're talking about in a society that, say, was a 1960s or even a 1950s society. But when you've got so many diverse cultures, from an extreme libertarian view of culture right through to a closed, almost isolationist view of culture, or a culture that believes women should be hidden and covered away, that surely in itself provokes huge problems for legislators and those who want to take action. Joe Tucci.
Yes, John, I agree. I mean, the issues that we've got are real for children. Children are experiencing this and having consequences to their development. So we need to understand that the interpretation of childhood is at the heart of what we're debating and what we're trying to negotiate as a community, I think. And an interpretation of childhood still needs to have within it more of a sense of freedom, more of a sense of innocence, more of a sense that children can be given the time and space to find their own sense of self, their sense of identity, without it being imposed by companies who are decided to that they are the next target group to make money out of, and that's a problem.
Let's go back to companies then. For all of you, the commodification of our society is one that's at the heart of what our listeners have talked about, of what Joe's talking about. Melinda, you've dealt with this issue consistently for a number of years, yet you don't seem to be able to move most companies, because companies at the bottom line are saying, we will do what we do because of the profit motive. And if the profits are there and society allows us to do it, we will. It took a huge campaign to get the smoking issue where it is against the forces of tobacco. Tobacco still hasn't given up. Where do we start on this one?
John, I agree with you that it is a challenge to tackle the vested interests of global corporations and big business, but I don't agree with you that we can't move corporates at all. We have seen in the last 2.5 years victories against companies like Bonds, Best & Less, Calvin Klein, Harvey Norman, and multiple others, all as a result of citizen activism. You see, governments aren't going to do anything unless they know there is a constituency for change. And that's what we've been working on, is developing that groundswell, that citizens activism, brand jamming, using new forms of social media in these campaigns. I think we can change them. The fact is that we just had recently, myself and Julie Gale, 3 hours with the CEO of Kmart in a very positive meeting. And as I said, we hope to make an announcement soon. Next week in Sydney, I'm meeting with another major corporate. They need to realise it's in their interests to sign on. Every year since we started, we have had something called the cross them off your Christmas list of corporate social offenders. And we name all of ones that have been consistent corporate offenders, and our supporters say, OK, we're not going to shop there. It would be so great for us to be able to recommend corporates who have made a decision to act ethically. So it's actually in their interest to get on board, because if they don't, we will continue to boycott them. And we've now got thousands of citizens involved in this grassroots outcry, this grassroots collective shout, and we believe that's going to continue to build, and we will continue to work. And yes, smoking did take a long time, but eventually, you know, we got there. And in fact, Collective Shout is very much modelled on a campaign called Bugger Up, which initially was to do with smoking. And so we take heart from that. Yes, some of these campaigns do take a long time, but we're seeing some positive signs, and people have had enough, people are sick of it, and it's time for transparency and accountability rather than this hands-off free-for-all that the industry has at the moment. And the outcomes will be worse if nothing is done.
Elizabeth, isn't there a default position in society, certainly in political culture these days, and it's almost a consensus, that you have a libertarian strand in both left-wing politics and right-wing politics, left libertarians, right libertarians, so both political parties have elements in them which to say, look, you go anywhere near this, you're going to be moral policemen, and society doesn't want any more moral policemen.
Okay, yeah, I was going to disagree with you at first, but when I realised you were asking about both the major political parties, yes, you're right. There is a default libertarian position in both of the major political parties. And it's got to be said, the Greens as well, they have been very vocal in their opposition to internet filtering, for example. So they have a very strong libertarian streak there too. You know, you're right that when it comes to those political parties, that is the default position. But then, you know, there are people like Melinda and me and Maggie and Joe and, you know, and we're here on the ABC talking to the whole country. So there is also general interest out there in the view that says, come on, let's be a bit more responsible. Let's think about what's ultimately going to be in the best interests of the community, and that's not necessarily a free-for-all. And I also wanted to comment that this idea of being a diverse society with diverse views and diverse cultural attitudes and so on, it's actually not new. In the 1960s, there was a lot of debate and dissension going on about the Vietnam War. There were very different attitudes to that. Back in the 50s, it was over communism, and there was the Communist Party Dissolution Act, and then there was a referendum and so on. There's always been a lot of debate over big issues, and eventually society seems to get them right somehow. I hope that we'll get this one right too.
We've got about 15 seconds left. Maggie Hamilton, the final word.
I'd just say that, you know, as we're looking at the accountability of corporations, where we talk about the triple bottom line, this includes the environmental impact, we can add in the social impact there, and that would be a very powerful way of focusing corporations in terms of their success or otherwise.
Thank you all for joining us. To Joe Tucci, Melinda Tankard-Rees, Professor Elizabeth Hansley and Maggie Hamilton on Sunday Nights. We'll put the details up on our website and you can follow the issue on Sunday Nights on ABC Radio. This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.